Hello. Welcome to I Am Wisdom with your host, Katrina Cavanaugh. I Am Wisdom is all about the connection between mind work and energy work, spirituality, and finding easy, everyday ways to heal your life. Katrina Cavanaugh is a qualified therapist and one of Australia's leading intuitives and spirituality coaches. Katrina will be taking your calls and bringing you some special guests. Settle in, relax, and enjoy the healing on I Am Wisdom with Katrina Cavanaugh on Om Times Radio.
Hello, it's Katrina Cavanaugh here, and you're listening to I Am Wisdom here on Om Times Radio. Well, an amazing thing has occurred, and in the United States of America, we've had a change of time. You've moved into daylight saving, or perhaps you've finished daylight saving. And so it's been an interesting lead up to today's show because I have a wonderful, beautiful guest with me on today's show, and her name is Cheryl Jones. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Cheryl Jones in just a moment. But, you know, in the lead-up to today's show, we realized that we had not calculated the time zone correctly, and so I had to stretch this brain of mine to consider what had gone on, and I was able to work out that I had not calculated the time difference. But very kindly, Cheryl was able to wait and be available 1 hour later than I expected, and I might be 1 hour early. I still can't get that quite right. Either way, I'm very pleased to say that we're going to have a really, really interesting show, a very good quality show with Cheryl today. So before we get onto the show, I just wanted to say, how are you? How has your week been? I hope your week has been full of lots of precious moments, times when you were able to, I guess, gather some realizations about yourself and your life and your relationships and just your everyday experience that were kind and compassionate towards yourself, because that's really what it's all about. The way we think about ourselves in any given moment is the most important thing. It's an amazing time over here in Australia for me. We are in the process of organizing an amazing campaign beginning next year across our national media here. I have a really special program called Kindness on Purpose, which is all about connecting children to empathy via acts of kindness on purpose. And right now I'm really busy behind the scenes working with some TV producers, creating some amazing video about the program, working closely with this amazing school local in my local area to continue with the pilot, as well as, you know, talking to my special media friends that I have here in Australia, who are gathering in the most amazing form of support for me in the program. So watch this space. There'll be much more about that coming up. Other than that, I have some amazing events coming up. So the Kindness on Purpose program sits on the mainstream side of my work. And then on the other side, as you know, I have my spiritual work. That's what we're here for on the show. And that work is all about, you know, working with people as a medium and as a clairvoyant and as a coach. And so I have some great events coming up. One coming up here in Wollongong in my local area on the 25th of November. And you can get the details of that, as well as my amazing event coming up in Sydney in March 2016 at a great venue called Mounties, which is a really pleasant place to go, and it allows a nice space for people to gather in one of the Sydney suburbs. So if you're looking to get online and come along to those, then the best place for you to go would be my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Katrina Cavanaugh. So let's get to today's show. Today's show is all about working with illness, death, and grief, and how working with illness, death, and grief, both our own as well as a therapist supporting other people's, can really lead to a surprising life. That's what we're going to be talking about today. And look, the amount of people, as you know, or, you know, if you're new to the show, you're about to hear it, but, you know, those who follow the show, you know that, you know, I sit on about 22 years experience as a relationships, grief and trauma therapist in the mainstream work field. And, you know, so I obviously have some understanding of this area, as well as, you know, in my experiences in a really busy ER over 10 years where I worked with over 400 sudden and unexpected deaths. So, you know, grief has certainly been part of my working life and obviously part of my personal life as well. For me, when I had the opportunity to talk to Cheryl, what was attractive about that was firstly the way she describes her work, the way she describes her understandings of the way grief impacts on us and our lives and the healing process. But just that, you know, it's so nice to have another person's perspective. And, you know, I can give you mine and that's wonderful, but I don't consider myself to be the be-all and end-all expert on one person with one understanding or one set of understandings. And the more people I can get onto this show that can talk about this most important topic and give their perspective, the better. So without any further hesitation, let me tell you more about Cheryl and then we'll introduce her to you. So Cheryl Jones is a marriage and family therapist and she specializes in grief. During her training, her first wife was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which was at the time a uniformly fatal illness with about a 6 month to 1 year prognosis. So, you know, Cheryl's had first-hand experience, hasn't she? So in the 8 years that followed, Cheryl engaged daily in the work of preparing for her death. She received training during this period from Stephen and Andrea Levine. I believe they're the authors of Who Dies and Grieving into Life and Death, as well as Richard Onley. He's the founder of the Self-Acceptance Training. And then after her own wife's death, Cheryl immersed herself in her own multifaceted grief and was really surprised by the frequent moments of joy that she found in the process of grief. Now, since then, Cheryl has become a really strong spokesperson and speaker on the topic of grief. She has her own private practice and she's host of a really special radio on Voice America. I was a guest there a while ago. It was wonderful to talk to her. And her show is called Good Grief Radio. So if you want to hear more of Cheryl after today's show, then I'm really encouraging you to get over there and listen to that on Voice America, Good Grief Radio. And each week on that show, she interviews guests who've been transformed by engaging with the experience of loss. You know, I mean, really important interviews. Cheryl's also the manager of professional education at the Women's Cancer Resource Center in Oakland. And she's developed and teaches in and facilitates the continuing education program there and also consults and facilitates support groups there. So she is a really, really busy person. She's trained extensively with Irving Polster, leader in the field of Gestalt therapy, and she's an author of Everybody's Life is Worth a Novel. So I cannot hold on any longer. Welcome, Cheryl, to the show. How are you going?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. Thanks.
I'm really good.
I'm excited to talk myself. You know, I'm usually on the other end.
I know.
The microphone. So this is a great turnaround for me.
Well, you are. No, so normally you're the one asking the questions and reflecting with your guests, of course. So I'm really, like I've already said, very, very feel very fortunate to have you. And I'm really going to be promoting this the podcast version of our show today to many of my clients as well, so they can listen. So let's get into the work. We've only got a few more minutes before we get into our first break, but let's begin beginning to hear your own story. And what I'm really, really interested in with your own story is what was it about working with illness and death and grief that then led you to experience a surprising life?
Well, you know, sometimes the things that end up teaching you the most at first are the hardest and the most difficult. As you mentioned, my first wife, end of the 80s, probably 1987, was diagnosed with this very lethal cancer, incurable. Now they're calling it manageable because people are living longer. But at the time, it was a very quick lethal diagnosis. Mm. And then what happened is that she didn't die. She lived another 8.5 years instead of a half a year to a year. However, it's a very disabling cancer. So, and she was never, you know, how they'll say, you're all clear, you're out of the woods, whatever you might say. That never happened because it was, you know, they were just, well, we're not sure why you keep living, but you're still alive. And what that created was a situation in which we had to, being who we were anyway, face up to death. And also face up to the need for help, which I was terribly bad at accepting by and large. And for me, I had to face up to a lot of my fears of living. I was a very shy person, and I'd come to a party before it started to, you know, not disappoint the host and then leave when people started coming. You know, I liked a little world, a one-on-one world, much more than a broad world. And she was quite different than that. She was a very social person, very well-loved person. And suddenly we had people in and out of our house every day. And, you know, I just had to change. And what I found after a couple of years of panic, and I do want to emphasize that, a couple years of panic and real, real hard fear, is that I started feeling actually very changed and very better and a lot more open. And I know we're going to have a break soon, but I can talk about some of the things we did to bring that about. But that really changed my perspective. I'd had therapy before that, and it helped me to cope better, a lot better, with what went on in my life. But I didn't feel my personality had changed. I just cope better with, you know, kind of the shyness and the difficulties that I had. And this experience with her and then her death and her grief, I really felt remarkably different as a person after I went through that. And so I've always brought that into my work, that in anything that we're facing that's difficult, there is that possibility.
And it's that possibility that I want to talk to you more about when we come back from our break. And your story is a phenomenal one, I guess, in the way that you have found your way to feel it and experience it and then respond to it. Stay with me, everyone. We're going into a break. And after the break, we'll continue our conversation with our special guest, Cheryl Jones.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Are you ready to shift your energy, consciousness, and limiting beliefs? Join me, Shefali Burns, every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern on Shifting with Shefali here on OM Times Radio. Shift the blocks, limitations, and negative energies that have kept you from experiencing a life filled with joy, peace, love, abundance, and happiness. Are you ready to shift with Shefali? Are you ready to shine your brilliance?
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Welcome back to I Am Wisdom, here with Katrina Kavanagh on OM Times Radio. So today I have a very special guest with me, Cheryl Jones, and Cheryl Jones is a marriage and family therapist who specializes in grief. And just before the break, we were talking about, or really Cheryl was sharing her own experience of her first exposure to grief. Was this your first exposure to grief and loss, Cheryl?
I would say it was my first exposure to death.
To death.
One thing that really changed for me is my awakening to the fact that grief is a part of everyday life, that we're always gaining and losing. And, you know, I'd experienced some pretty large things that I now put in the category of life of grief, for instance, moving a lot as a kid. And it's not like it is now. It wasn't like it is now where you kept people through Facebook and all that. When we would move, that was the end of all the relationships I'd previously known.
Yes, those were
kinds of deaths. And then when I came out as a lesbian, I was 17. Mm-hmm. And that is actually a loss experience in the sense, for most people, in the sense that this sense of kind of being accepted and loved is often lost, at least for a period of time. And so looking back, I feel that was very profound experience of loss. And then there were some other things pretty big, but it was the first time I really faced up to death.
And
there's a way that that's different. But then once I experienced that, I could see that elements of what I was experiencing with her had always been present in the smaller losses.
Right. So can you tell me, I'm really curious to know for you what your experience was like once your partner had passed away, your wife had passed away, what it was like for you, what was the grieving process for you like? What did you discover about grief?
So I have to say a little about before she died, because before she died, we had really actively engaged in preparing. Now, what I'd say is you can't be prepared, but you can prepare. I until the very last, I wouldn't have said I was prepared.
Yes.
But I was that whole time preparing. And there are some things that I did during that process with encouragement from her, from the people we were working with around her illness. I think the main thing that I did that helped me in grief was that I made a contract with myself, actually. I was very serious about it. I made an agreement with myself that for at least the first year after she died, I was going to give myself everything I wanted or needed that I could give myself.
Yes. Okay.
Within the limitations of finances and time. And that was such a good decision, because I think grief values being followed. And because I'd made that, what I'd thought in advance was, this is going to be so terrible, I better figure out a way to hold my own hand through it.
Yes.
And it turned out it wasn't so terrible, but it was, I think, because I made that agreement to really pay attention, to really allow the times that were painful for me in grief, like out and out, wrenching, were usually when I had to do something that wasn't in line with where I was at the moment.
Yes, yes. And this is a constant theme that you would see with your own clients as I see with mine.
Absolutely. Mm. And often when I'm working with people, that's the experience they're having every single day.
Yes.
Because they have not made enough room for the psychic shift that's going on inside of you when you've lost someone. I didn't lose Joanne in many ways, but I did lose her in some very significant ways. She didn't wake up in the bed anymore. She didn't help me raise our children. You know, there are many, many profound differences in my life that I had to rearrange my landscape. To accommodate that. And of course, I was a different person than I'd been before she got ill. And that was the first time there was all this space to notice how different it was. Yes. So I believe that helped me a great deal. And the other thing is that there are some experiences I had that in an earlier time in my life, I would have considered profoundly terrible. Like I cried every day.
Yes.
I just cried. That's just what happened.
And, yes.
But it did not, it felt like a warm rain. It didn't feel like a hurricane.
Mm.
It was as if I was drenched in my grief as opposed to in battle with it.
And this is something that we began talking about in our pre-interview conversation that, I think I shared with you that just earlier today I'd been with someone very close to me who has experienced several losses in a 12-month period, I think it's four or five. People, friends and family have died in the last 12 to 18 months in her life. And in addition to that, she'd also experienced an exposure to a very traumatic motor vehicle accident where a young fellow had, really, really severely been injured, and she was one of the first cars on the scene. So she had this extremely dramatic and traumatic experience. And then following on from that, within the next six months onwards, she then had a succession of deaths in her family and friendship network. It was uncanny. But as you know from your work, this sometimes happens. You do come across clients who have, one death is hard enough, but there are others who do attend to. There are
absolutely
many.
Absolutely, yes.
And one of the things that she talks about with her experience is that real resistance to, there's such a fear there about the grief process. So, and I know this to be true with many of my clients, because when the death is sudden, or if there's someone who they don't have the information or the awareness that you had around, that concept that you talked about as far as really making a contract, an agreement with yourself to really give yourself the time to grieve in that first 12 months. I mean, that is beautiful. But not everyone has that, do they? They don't.
Well, the thing is, though, I want to say very clearly, I didn't have it.
Right.
Okay. Although I had done therapy, that had gotten me I had wonderful therapy.
Mm.
But I'm not sure that I quite completely understood the fact that my refuge was my own internal experience. Mm. That I could go into any feeling, and I really, really want to thank Stephen and Andrea Levine. We went to many workshops with them, and they really taught very effectively how to go into your own experience and let it happen.
Mm.
And I mean that very physically.
Okay.
I don't think grief is a mental process.
No, I agree.
I believe it's largely a physical process that has mental repercussions. But if you're not feeling quite safe in your inner territory, it's really hard to grieve. And those 8.5 years during which she was ill, I fought against my insides. I ran this way and that to get out of it. I tried everything. But in the end, I had to surrender to my own experience.
Mm.
And so that decision I made to make room for myself after she died would not have been possible so quickly, so immediately, if I hadn't learned how to do it before she died.
Mm. But this is go on.
It's just there. I think that really the sort of wrenching tragic part of that experience was earlier when she was first diagnosed, and all of that. And I'm not saying grief wasn't painful. It's just I didn't have any resistance to the pain at that point.
Yes. So I guess what I'm really curious to know, and what I'd love to share with the people listening to this show, because we always trust that whoever's meant to listen to this show will listen to the show, I'm really curious to hear from you about what are the practical things or processes, and I know there's not one formula, we're talking about that before in our break
sure.
conversation, but what are some of the practical things and processes that people can do, who maybe may have just experienced a loss, who may be 10 years after and they're so frightened of grieving that they've repressed it and suppressed it and kept themselves busy or, you know, jumped into a drug and alcohol or whatever it is that distracts them from not doing the work. What are the things that they could be doing that would support them to go into their own experience and let it happen? I love the way you describe that.
You know, I think the number one place to start is how self-critical most of us are.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh yes.
And so we have a feeling and we go, oh, I shouldn't be having that feeling.
Yes.
Uh-oh, should be feeling that. Oh, what's wrong with me that I'm, you know, the whole catastrophe in our minds. And we can't, if you just say, stop thinking that, it's actually more of the same.
Mm, Cheryl, I'm so passionate about this topic.
Of self-criticism, more judgment.
Yeah.
So I think what we can do is to begin to develop an observing mind that says, oh, look how hard I am on myself. That just takes a softer approach, but doesn't get in a fight with what's happening. So that's a way to begin. Putting a very little breath in your belly.
Okay, so what do you mean by that?
I mean, most of us breathe from the chest up.
Yes, they do. Yes.
and you can't fight with that either. That's the way we are socialized to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, you know, for instance, here I am on radio. It's exciting. I got a little keyed up. Okay, just sit still for a second, which I did before we started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagine that I have a mouth at my belly as well. And just put a little air in there. No big deal. Just a little air. One thing I've heard is you can't lie to yourself if you're breathing in your belly. If your belly's open.
Yeah, it's so important. That belly breathing is so important. Yep.
And then there's, you know, once you do that, of course, you might end up crying. And then you can say, oh, tears, that's natural because I'm breathing.
Thank you so much. Now, you'll be staying with us. That's wonderful. And we're going into a break. And we're going to continue the conversation about grief, about death and illness and grief, and how we move through that process in a way that is nurturing and effective for you. Stay with us.
Feed your soul with Waves of Consciousness on OM Times Radio.
What if living didn't have to be so serious?
What if you could move beyond your problems with greater confidence and ease than you've ever imagined?
Throw your labels out the window and join the Irreverent Therapist for practical tips and a very different way of approaching the changes you would like to create.
Marilyn Bradford
and Pam Hodling
have empowered hundreds of people to come out of self-judgment, quit looking to experts, and begin to create the lives they desire.
Join us Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on the Irreverent Therapist Show.
Are you ready to shift your energy, consciousness, and limiting beliefs? Join me, Shefali Burns, every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern on Shifting with Shefali here on OM Times Radio. Shift the blocks, limitations, and negative energies that have kept you from experiencing a life filled with joy, peace, love, abundance, and happiness. Are you ready to shift with Shefali? Are you ready to shine your brilliance?
The cutting edge of conscious radio. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to I Am Wisdom here on OM Times Radio. I'm Katrina Kavanagh, your host. And today I have a very special guest with me, and that is Cheryl Jones. And Cheryl and I are talking right now about the process of illness and death and grief and how to basically move through the process of grief when it can, for some people, be very, very frightening, the idea of letting go and surrendering into that space of grief. So just before the break, Cheryl was sharing with us some actual practical things that people can be doing to help them, to allow them to go into their own experience of grief and let it happen. So, Cheryl, you were just talking about tissues, and I want to talk to, I want to say something about the tissues. Sorry, about crying. I want to talk about tissues. Crying is an amazing process, and as we know, there's a lot of physical, you know, it's so soothing for us physically, and it's such a great way to express sadness, you know, general sadness plus deep sadness. And I have to be, you know, very comfortable with crying because I'm one of those people who cries really easily. I always have been. Tried to change it. I can't change it. I'm the person crying in the movies. I'm the one crying. In any moment, I'll be the one crying because it just seems to be the way. And as much as, you know, when I was younger, I tried to stop crying, I was never able to stop it. It just was something that would come quite, absolutely involuntary for me. So for me, I've had to, you know, work very hard at getting comfortable with it. Not very hard, just changed my perception a while ago about it. But what I do with my clients is when my clients begin to express their sadness through crying, I always, you know, get the box of tissues and I'll plop it down beside them. But I always say, and I've got clients who laugh about it with me now, but I always say to them, now I'm putting these tissues here beside you, but I need you to know that, you know, tissues can sometimes imply stop crying, but I am not wanting you to stop, you know, I want to imply stop crying. They're beautiful tissues. I give you the best quality tissues, but, you know, please, this is not a sign of, you know, I'm not wanting you to stop crying. I just want you to feel comfortable expressing. But, you know, every now and again, we need to mop up a little bit. So,
well, aren't you, you're really referring to the socialization to not feel.
Yes.
Because if we were not socialized that way, when someone offered us a tissue, we'd be saying, oh, they're accepting my tears.
That's correct.
But we don't. We say, you know, oh, she must want me to, you know, buck up and wipe them away.
Clean that mess up. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of our perception there. You know, the other thing that came to my mind, I hope you don't mind if I throw it in, is that this idea of a discrete grief process that we go through and then it's over, I don't believe in that.
Yes, great.
Here's a for instance. I mean, mostly when I think about Joanne, I feel incredibly grateful. I have many moments of intense gratitude, which is also, I feel grief is very, very alive with feeling of every sort, you know. And just over the 20 years since she died, that has dominated more. But last week was 20 years since she died. And I was actually pretty blindsided by a very deep mourning. For almost a week, I just could not fathom that person was not in the world.
Yes.
And it wasn't so personal anymore, like she left me or any of that. It was just, how can it be true? Death is so long. And so there will be those moments, and I actually savor those moments because that's my connection to her. That's part of our relationship. There are other parts, you know, she's sort of a guide in spirit to me when I'm working. If I get stuck, I ask for help. You know, there are all different ways that she's integrated into my, well, of course, the radio show. She's with me every week. She's the reason I do it.
Yes.
You know, so it's just like a relationship with a living person. It's very textured and, you know, many different aspects. But I wouldn't want to cut off any aspect because the experience of losing her was so huge in my life in good, bad, and in different directions, and I'm open to that all. So that's just something I believe about grief, that we don't need to try to end it. It just evolves its own way over time.
And what do you think happens for people who don't allow themselves to move through a process, or just, it's not really a process, because I don't like that either. It's not really a process. It's just an absolute shift in the way you experience your life and yourself. And like
absolutely.
You say, the relationship obviously with that person has changed, of course, because they're physically not present. But as you know, yes, of course, I mean, I believe that too. Being a medium, I do believe they're spiritually present, but plenty of evidence of that.
But, you know, whether you believe they're actually out somewhere or you don't, they're part of you. And that relationship still exists.
That's correct. So
I have encountered, I've tried to think over the years, have I ever worked with someone who came to me that because they had grief that they lost a parent as a child? Many people come to me for that reason. I don't believe I've ever had someone come to me for that reason who was supported in grieving that person, who was allowed to feel bad about it, and where people really talked to them and helped them with the feelings they were having. And I can't think of a time in 30 years of my work.
Well, there's just, I agree, because there is not, and that would be for me one of the primary areas, as you were saying earlier, that people feel great pain is when they are being made or expected to be and do a certain way or be at a certain place that is against what they need in that moment of their own grief. That's where the greatest level of distress does occur.
I think so. I had one client who had a brain tumor when she was very young, which is another physical loss of physical health is another kind of loss.
Yes, correct.
And she just would not talk about it. She wouldn't go near it. And she was clogged up in every other way. When you block off one part of your experience, it all has to shut down to a degree. For instance, opening myself up to my difficult feelings has made me so much more joyful. When my wife was sick, I developed a sense of humor. I'd never been funny.
Yes. I'm sure you had been. You just hadn't experienced it.
It wasn't coming out. You know, I would tell a joke and people would look at me really strangely because they thought I was serious. You know, I didn't have that ability to bring laughter to myself or others. And I think that being able to feel deeply bereaved opened up everything. So that's the central point for me when I'm working with someone. How do I invite them into their own experience? How do I support the idea that whatever they're experiencing is okay and safe to experience, and that there's a refuge somewhere in them. They are designed to feel what they feel.
That's right, because that's why that's happening. The reason why those feelings are there are because that is absolutely in alignment with the design of the mind and the body and the human psyche, really. So you can't really escape it, because that's what's going to happen. It's a normal way of responding to a very sad event.
Yes. I worked once, went to a workshop with a man named Maladoma Somme. He's from Africa, and he had been trained by the elders in his small village and then kind of sent to the U.S. to carry that work. He did grief workshops, and he said when he went back and described how we do grief in the U.S. and I've talked with several Australian people who say it's not much different over there.
No, I can guarantee you it's not.
They were horrified. They said, why would such an intelligent peoples give up their grief?
Yes.
They were absolutely horrified. They could not understand why we would sit quietly with grief, why feeling would not be invited, why everything is supposed to be so positive. They've gone to a better place and all this. Absolute inability to understand that. So I think we're talking about grief in the context of societies that have shut it down, and a lot of other things have shut down in the meantime.
And I'm really curious to know, I'm mindful we've got a break coming up in a few minutes, but if there's time before we break, and if not, we can talk about it afterwards. What were some of the differences that this fellow spoke about? What were the ways that he experienced grief in his own home country that really allowed the grief process to be part of life?
You know, in where he grew up, grief was a community event. Mm-hmm. They would set up basically an altar to the person.
Great.
And at some points, everyone in the village would be dancing behind, and a griever would go to. First of all, everyone was considered to be in grief because the entire community had lost that person.
Yes.
But whoever it was present for at the moment would go and wail and cry and express with the support of everyone else around them. Mm. Isn't that remarkably different?
Well, it is. And what I know about grief is, and this is a direct result of being bedside with many, many mothers and fathers who had lost children, all ages and stages, in a busy emergency room here in Australia, is that the human response to that kind of loss is to wail. The sound that I heard over and over again from mothers, as particularly men are too socialized, I think there was often they would often cry quietly, and there's some sadness. There's great sadness in me for that. But when the rawness of the experience was there, when they had the physical form, the body of their baby or their child or their 30-year-old son or whatever it was, every single woman made the same deep guttural sound that came deep from within them. It was amazing. It was phenomenal, Cheryl, to be there. It was very humbling to be there. But it was the same sound of every single woman. And I've been present for many. And that is what needed to happen. That was absolutely what needed to happen in that moment. Mm-hmm. And to think that we don't then allow that beyond that moment is astounding. It's astounding. So I guess what I'm curious about too is length of time, you know, because people seem to get caught up in the time frame of grief, don't they? That we can, you know, literally.
They do.
And we have 3 days. We're allowed 3 days. Like, you know, here in Australia, if you're working, you only get certain leave if the person's directly related to you. And then if you do bereavement leave is 2 or 3 days, best case scenario.
Absolutely.
We're coming up to a break. That always happens to me. We're so deep in the conversation. Stay with us. This is a profound and wonderful conversation here with Cheryl Jones. And after the break, we'll be completing that conversation for the show.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Welcome to The Gathering Around My Kitchen Table on Equilarium FM, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join my guests as we integrate spirituality into everyday reality with vibrant conversations, inspired interviews, and my latest channeled guidance to inspire and brighten your day. I'm Claire Johnson, and together we'll be raising vibrations across the nations.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Welcome back, everyone, to I Am Wisdom here on Om Times Radio. And on today's show, we're having a really wonderful conversation with my special guest, Cheryl. I'm Katrina Kavanagh, and the topic for today's show is all about illness, death, and grief, and how the process of grief and grieving can transform you, really. And we're right now talking about grief, and been talking about the limitations that our society has, particularly in our Western society, around not really truly understanding death and dying and grief. And just before the break, we started talking, or I mentioned the word time frame for, around grief, and reflected that in certainly in Australia and our Western society, that we have this very strict, you know, you've got 2 or 3 days to grieve, really, and at best we're a year, and after that we just all continue on with our normal life, and if it goes away very quickly, and those who are suffering are left to feel their pain and then feel pressure, whether it's overt or covert, to get up and get on with it, you know, and they're mm-hmm. in agony. So yes. Would you like to comment about that, Cheryl?
Yes. What comes to mind is I interviewed a guest recently, Frances Weller, a wonderful therapist and writer, whose main thrust of his work is that grief is meant to be experienced in community. We're meant to support each other. And of course, there's a place where we need to go inward and sit with ourselves. But without that balance point of community, and I do think that's part of the role of us grief counselors, because mm-hmm. it's so, so difficult for people to get support from their communities. I mean, I just hear over and over and over again how uncomfortable everyone is, and you know, I don't feel I can talk about it anymore. And so, in a way, therapy has become a place to feel at least a tiny bit of that sense of community walking with you mm. and holding your hand through whatever it is that you experience. And of course, that's influenced by the relationship you had with that person, whether it was a difficult or easy parent, child, sister,
yes, of course.
You know, all those things influence, I think, and then our own who we are influences. But that idea that we're kind of alone with it is something I'm certainly working to change. With several other people, run something called the Death Salon here, where we use the arts to invite conversation about death. We do it about once a quarter. Okay. I'm on a bit of a soapbox that we have to start being together in our experiences of loss. That's really the natural thing. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed lately, you know, for instance, when Princess Diana died, when the World Trade Center happened, there's this intense, you know, suddenly there are pictures, flowers, memorials, you know. There's some way that these global events for a moment invite us into grieving together.
Mm.
And then often it derails into something else. But but I think there's a real hunger.
Yes, there is.
That we just want to be people who, I mean, how weird would it be if we lost these important others and we didn't feel bad?
Exactly. The insanity.
That would just be so contrary. I would really worry about someone who had no, you know, who quickly just felt nothing.
That's right.
It's not natural to the experience of loving.
That's right. So really in Western society, there are people like you and I and many other therapists and coaches who are working very hard to be creating opportunities, creating at least a sense of community for people who are grieving through therapy, perhaps even a support group or something like that. And for example, your lovely name sounds like an amazing initiative, the Death Salon. But really, that's the answer at this point in time for people in Western society. Whilst ever it is what it is, these are the outlets that people ideally need to seek to get that sense of community and that sense of belonging. In that, because for me, when I talk to my clients, I talk about the room that I use. It's really important to me that it's nice. And that it's a comforting place for them to be. So I keep it very neutral and very, you know, clear and clean and all that kind of thing. And and just pleasing to the eye, and because I want people to come in and be able to relax in that space,
yes.
and know that this is a place where they are physically safe to be able to do the grieving work or to do the to experience their feelings. Basically, that's what it is, isn't it?
And also, I think you know, part of why I'm so intent on doing my radio show, Good Grief, is that it gives people a chance in their own quiet place to hear people talk about, you know, the most wrenching losses and where people ended up.
Mm.
Because every week people are describing these absolutely astounding things that they've done as a direct outgrowth of their grief.
Yes.
And I think there's a way that encouragement helps. You know, I had a very close friend whose partner died a year before my partner died.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you what a difference that made, because I looked at her and I said, she's a person, I'm a person, and she's walking through this.
Mm-hmm.
It must be doable.
Yes, it is. It is.
You know?
It is doable.
And so then seeing people kind of, that's part of what community does. It gives you the sense of a little window into what's ahead and what's possible.
Mm. That's correct. And therefore it's inspirational, really, isn't it?
Inspirational, exactly. Exactly.
We were talking previously, and I'd love for us to at least, in the final moments of the show, we've got approximately about, you know, I think about 5 minutes to go. So whilst it's really hard to cover this topic in 5 minutes, what I found to be really amazing about our earlier conversation was when you were touching on the concept of the phenomena of transformation, and you were describing in the context of post-traumatic growth field, but I think the phenomena of transformation, you know, that experience that is available to all of us as we move through the grief process or experience our feelings in relation to grief, that there is this element that we can become quite transformed. And that's almost like, you know, if you're pitching it or doing a bit of a PR campaign on the benefits of grieving and surrendering to it, that's got to be one of the things, doesn't it, that would be
absolutely
appealing.
Absolutely. Yes. I didn't realize that I had been actively engaged in the field of post-traumatic growth for, I don't know, 15 or 16 years before I ever heard of it. But there's research being done. And as a contrast, maybe about 7% of people who experience a trauma and a loss through death is a trauma, and a lot of other things too, will experience post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yes.
But 30 to 90% of the people who experience those same traumas will experience post-traumatic growth. Mm. And it falls into several categories, a deepening or changed spiritual perspective,
mm-hmm.
Changes in relationships,
mm-hmm.
A deeper sense of your own strength.
Yes.
A greater appreciation of the moment.
Mm.
You know, those are things that do come out of these experiences. And the other interesting thing that they've found, which I think connects with what we were just talking about, is that that is a lot more likely if you have support.
Yes.
If you have someone to help you make meaning of the experience and to sort out, you know, to make space for your feelings about it and to actively reflect what might be changing in you as a result. I was extremely lucky that I had that.
Yes.
You know, in my partner, my community, my teachers, everyone was helping me to make meaningful what was painful.
Sure.
And that's what I think I'm most intent on. How do we support each other in that?
Mm. Because that for me is, I agree with you, the, you know, for people to experience their feelings and feel that deep sadness that must come when anyone we care about passes over, and then to be able to be connected through that experience with those elements you described. I mean, that they're the things that change life. That's the evidence that you have changed.
Exactly. And still 20 years later, you know, I'll be up against a difficult thing and it'll get me going for a little minute. And then I'll go, I've done things so much harder than this.
Yes.
And it puts my life in a perspective.
Yes, it's fantastic.
You know, so all those things are familiar to me, all those changes. So I want people to know that's the possibility, but you can't rush it.
Correct. No, you can't, and you can't bring it. Yes, that's correct. Now, Cheryl, your time today with me has been absolutely amazing here on the show, and if someone would like a little bit of Cheryl, they'd like to reach out to you, maybe even in the form of therapy or any or your program, where is the best way for, how is the best way for them to find you?
There are two ways to get to me. Mm. One is if you just put Good Grief, comma, Voice America, and Voice America is all run together, in your search bar, my show is going to pop up. There is another show called Good Grief, so you have to put Voice America. And then the second way is and on my host page for the show is are links to everything. Mm-hmm. So that's one way. The other way is my website, which is www.weathering, as in weathering a storm, grief as in grief, .com.
Wonderful.
Weatheringgrief.com.
So www.weatheringgrief.com. That's how they can find you.
Yes.
As well as the Voice America.
And all the wonderful guests I've had on, some really amazing people. I want their work out there too.
Yeah. I'm really mindful that the show is coming to a close and they'll soon be winding us up with the end music. Here it is. I just want to say thank you very much, Cheryl, for your time. This show has been really amazing and I know that it will help many, many people as they listen to the wisdom that's come through today. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome.